Bonsoir. How are you, dear friends? We are building the most inspiring and phenomenal communities of wine lovers. As we all know, wine is the catalyst of the greatest discussion. We'll be talking wine, but of course food, and everything that touches all our nation and senses.
Sometimes ain't so damn nice, they ain't sweet like sugar or nice like spice. Innocent looking is their disguise, they enjoy making fools out of us guys. Now the truth comes out, my dear sweetheart, gonna tell you all about the way girls are.
Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends, welcome to JCB Live. We're gonna have an exciting time today, this happy hour. Happy hour punctuated with great music, because our friend founded DJ Vitamics a few decades ago. He was a major DJ on the tour and was so successful that he fell then in love with wine. He's had multiple lives, from music to wine to sommelier, and very recently created the United Sommelier Foundation. He lives in Napa Valley. He has a daughter of the same age as ours. We're great friends. He knows everything about wine. He's fantastic. He's charming. And he has a lot to say about the status of the wine world. Chris, would you come? I'm releasing the energy. Woo! There he is!
Brought my own soundtrack as we're coming in. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you.
Yeah. Good to be here. Champagne?
Oh, of course! To welcome you because you're the king of the night.
Thank you, my friend.
A little cabaret.
Good to be here.
Great to see you.
Alright. Have a seat, turn off the music.
Get down.
So!
Wine tasting.
Wine tasting today. So first.
Salut. Santé.
Very important. We look at each other in the eye. Why do we do this?
I don't know, why do we do this?
Poisoning.
Ah, poisoning.
In the old days.
Nice.
But I hear it's 7 years of bad food or something like that.
Right.
Or bad music, so we want to look at
bad food and music.
Actually, bad sex, dear friends, as we all know.
We can't have that.
So, Chris, how is it to start your
life? I can't believe I'm here with you.
I know!
It's fantastic.
So exciting. We are physically together.
Yeah.
You know, our lovely children go to school together. Isn't
that's right.
it fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, are they learning anything?
Charlie and Honoré.
Yes.
Fantastic, yeah. I think so. They just kind of started back a little bit and they're trying to figure it out. It's been quite a number of months, you know, dealing with all the kids and everything and trying to keep them entertained and work and start the United Sommeliers Foundation and everything else. It's been
You have so much to share today. So, just for all of you to know, our lovely kids believe in the Montessori system, which was a great lady at the turn of the previous century who started this school about learning as you become awakened, you learn. And as you become enlightened, you pursue a subject and you dive into it and you get to learn more. So
exactly. Yeah.
How did you decide to bring your children to the Montessori program?
Well, it's a pretty great program. I was raised going through public schools and I have two boys that also went through public schools. So I am a fan of the public school education, but you know, some people excel better at different forms of learning.
Yeah.
And I think for Charlie, she's just doing pretty miraculous and having a great time. You know, they have a garden there, so she's growing fava beans and tomatoes.
Yeah.
And she's learning a lot, and she works as a server at their restaurant, which is pretty much, I think, curated by Chris Costo at Meadowood. So I mean, it's a pretty interesting program, very highfalutin for St. Helena.
We
with that term, highfalutin?
I'm learning a new vocabulary.
Let me hear you say it, highfalutin.
Highfalutin. With a French accent.
Yeah,
hey,
it.
By the way, Mr. Blanchard, is a French name, Christophe. Where is it from originally?
It goes back a few generations to the Nantes region of Loire.
Is it because your great-grandparents were Huguenots?
Probably, yeah.
You need to know, dear friends, that Huguenot got kicked out of France. If you were not Catholic, get the hell out.
Yeah.
So they went to Belgium, Holland, and the east coast of the U.S. In fact, one of the most famous Huguenots of the United States, Rockefeller family. Huh. It's normally in French, Roquefeuille.
Ah, okay.
And it became Rockefeller, easier to pronounce.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, another one, just to give you a fun wine clue, is one of our wineries in the Russian River, the Deloge Vineyards.
Oh.
The family was known Deloges from the Lake of Loge, in the Loire Valley,
yeah,
next to Nantes.
Ah, very interesting.
And they came the same way, and they migrated to the East Coast, typically, then the Midwest, and then eventually, you know, Gold Rush and everything else followed in California.
Who knew I would get this amazing history lesson? There were some bubbles.
Well, what do you think? So, we amazing. Brought, as you could see, a Blanc de Blanc from Napa Valley. You're the wine experts.
Well, I'm an expert because I like to drink wine.
Is that what you define as an expert?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's opinion is valid. You know, I can't complain. I like things that are, you know, a little leaner sometimes or a little more bitter. People tease me about that, but I do love, you know, I do love good wine, whatever it is, and that's fantastic. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, Blanc de Blanc Napa Valley.
Beautiful.
And but give us a few musical terms to describe it, because,
dear
friends, 2 decades as one of the top DJ in the United States, DJ Vitamix.
Thank you. Well, it has been a few years, but you know, still DJing around. But what I like about it is I like the weight of it.
Yeah.
So it reminds me kind of like a bass line, almost like an old jazz bass line.
Mm.
This guy, Leroy Vinegar, that played with Miles Davis back in the day. Boom, 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 boom. You know, it's got those notes on the, on sort of, it's like a perfume.
Yeah.
So it's like the bass note, and then you move up to the mid, and then to sort of the sparkly notes of it as well, which are the bubbles, and that's treble. So maybe a little hi-hat going on the top
Ooh.
Of it.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's
here we talking.
That's very beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Chris, tell us about your, you know, you've mentioned multiple lives as I introduced you as.
Right.
As you've always told me, I'm living my fourth. So you have 5 more to go.
The third one I can't talk about.
Well, we want to know now. So tell us about music and the world of music and what do you think of where it's going today? So when you started.
Yeah. Well, I started back... I guess even before hip hop or anything, you know, was even created. So around the early 1980s, and I heard a song by Grandmaster Flash, which really influenced me. The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash and the Wheels of Steel. That would have been 1981 or 1982 or so.
Very cool.
And just like anything in life, I tried to figure out exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
So what the hell is this guy doing with the turntable? He's holding the side of it and going back and forth. So I started doing that. When I was 14, I had a radio show up in Portland, Oregon.
Oh.
And so I just started DJing, you know, and scratching and everything. And people would call up complaining. But it was pretty great back in the day.
Well, so you were the first white guy doing hip hop.
I was, yeah. I was the first white guy. I just got interviewed by a bunch of old school guys up there for the Northwest hip hop reunion thing.
Of course.
And they said, well, do you really want to talk about this? I said, yeah, well, hell yeah. It was a great time back
Well,
then.
This is the... And tell us about the scratching of the long playing records at the time. You know, you were scratching it against the diamond.
Exactly. Now you can, you know, jump on your phone and you can create beats and do anything you want. But back then you actually had to have a record player, which are coming back and, you know, put it on there, hold the side of it, and then just kind of move it back and forth. And then you could use your mixer and do all sorts of things, and the crowd would start jumping.
And moving that way.
Yeah, right. And I was a little kid. My parents would drive me to the radio station. You know, I was 15 years old, way out there at 3 a.m. to do this radio show.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they were great. They were really
so
great.
They really encouraged your
they did yeah
your evolution.
It's the same that I do for my son. Yeah, I mean, I always encourage him. He's into playing the piano. Like, he showed me Clair de Lune last night. He goes, wow. You ever heard of this song? And after 2 notes. Clair de Lune? Yeah, it's like, yeah. So it's neat. And I always tell him, you know, take any opportunity you can in life. Because I didn't know, I went to school, I didn't want to go to college. I went to University of Oregon. I went to college, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. I had a chance to go to Greece and DJ and all this stuff. My parents said, go to college. So I went to college, and when I went, all these other opportunities came up. You know, I got a chance to work in a film. I got a chance to do this. And I always tell my son, take any opportunity, even though it doesn't seem like it's something that makes sense or where you want to go, every opportunity leads to another opportunity. And here I am with you.
And I love this advice. Dear friends, we always seek for advice, and specifically during the times we're living, your direction, following your passion. So talking about passion, you followed your passion for almost two decades in the music world, right?
Right.
So explain what's the life of a DJ and how you create this amazing, phenomenal environment.
It's a glamorous time. I mean, it's great, especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, at the time I was touring with Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. And Fresh Prince is, you know, Will Smith now.
Yeah.
Who was at the time was the same age as me. He was like a 16-year-old kid. And, you know, we're up there performing and everything.
Because it's a performance.
It's a performance. And, like, the girls are coming out and people are, like, raising their hands. And, you know, it's, like, nonstop.
Were you in a little cage up there so nobody could catch you? like our good friend David Guetta?
Yeah.
Well,
I was on stage, you know, with the mic. And then I had dancers behind me.
Yeah.
And I had a DJ and everything else. But I'll tell you, the one thing, it may sound weird, the one thing I didn't do is I didn't do any drugs.
Yeah.
And I've never seen so much coke in my life. I mean, I would go backstage and there'd be like bowls of it. And I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I was kind of a weirdo because I was like the straight edge guy. So I didn't really get into anything at all.
Well, we have that in common. It's amazing. People always wonder, where do you get your energy?
Yeah.
I have it. It's there, right?
Right.
Just think, you know. But I need to say, we've seen a lot of it in the nightclubs and bars in the 80s.
But it'll destroy you. I mean, you know, many people have been through that. For me, I just didn't need it because I had, like you, so much energy. And so DJing and having fun. And then
you created your own music from music as well.
Yeah.
So you were accelerating the song, scratching the song.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So there's a sampler, like an Akai MPC, which is a sampler, basically has a bunch of buttons on it.
Yeah.
So you can sample other people's songs. At the time it was James Brown, so you take, you know, like a six second break of James Brown drum beat, you know, repeat it, and then you'd have a whole new song, and then you'd throw other tracks on top of it, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, this killer song that, you know, nobody had ever done before. And to this day, it's still going on. Obviously, there's new samplers and things like that. And it's such a creative thing because you can take all these old pieces of music and make this entirely new, you know, thing where as long as the crowd is getting up and dancing.
So I hope we're going to be able to play a few of those today.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And you still create music?
I still create, I got to admit. Yeah, in the garage. You know,
so you have your whole studio?
I'm banished to the garage. And like right now it's super hot, so it's kind of hard. But I do have a studio I set up there.
Cool.
In between, you know, the fried chicken fryer and the kids' books.
And the wine
stuff.
Cellar.
And the wine cellar. I think I've depleted it all. That's why I'm here today.
Well, we're going to refill it. But tell us about, you know, reading the crowd as well. Because I think the art of a DJ, right. I've always been great friends with DJ because I love nightclubs.
Yeah.
I still go to a lot of clubs. Uh-huh. Even though it's slightly different, obviously. I'm a little older now, so it's a different read. But I love the energy of the clubs, and I always admire a great DJ.
Yeah.
So give us the clue of a good DJ.
That's exactly right. You got to read the crowd. If you can see people kind of either going off to get a drink or not, you know, it's just not working. And it's really hard to explain. I think it's kind of like being a master sommelier.
Yeah.
You either kind of have those chops to be able to figure out what the wine is. And the same with a DJ. You can't really teach that. You got to just feel the energy. You can feel when you're playing a song, you can feel the energy rise. And I mean, you go up and down. Like you'll start slow, you'll come back up again. The crowd's like in a frenzy.
Yeah.
If you can't get those different levels of energy going, then you don't know what's going on. And you can't really teach that. You got to just feel what's going on. It's a real talent.
In that talent, did you have a few key songs that you knew would bring them back on the dance floor, as an example?
Yeah, but you know, if I go back, this is back in the olden days and stuff. And you know, we used to have all these like techno stuff and Planet Rock and Frankie Knuckles and, you know, house music, you know.
You're talking my era, so I remember those. Yeah.
You know, and everybody be jumping up. And
that's it.
Yeah, it was just, like I say, it was building this crescendo of, you know, energy and energy. So people just go nuts on the floor.
And did you have the strategy when the evening started? Let's say people start to coming at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Let's say the club closed at 2. You have 4 hours of performance.
Club closed at 2. What can I dump is that?
Well, I'm just saying for the newcomers in the world today, the club closed at 7 a.m.
Yeah, right.
So you think about all those hours and you kind of map out your approach?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you build into something when people are starting to show up, and then, you could keep going for longer, for sure.
Yeah.
Like you say, you just fill people out and see where it's going, and it just comes naturally. It's like, I don't know, it's like any great art form. If you're painting, you could sit there and work on a painting for hours and hours.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, so, and like, I wasn't drinking or doing anything at the time, but a lot of people, if you're just like, you know, buzzing, you can go all, you know, for 2 days.
So were you drinking water or juice or tonic water or something?
Yeah, I was probably just drinking water. I don't even remember.
No wine yet?
Not yet, until, you know.
So how did wine come?
So,
as I'm going to give him something that he's never tried before. Hiding. Number
awesome.
Three.
And I love these glasses.
Whatever
too.
That means, thank you. And number three, something very unique.
Number three.
You know, we'll talk about that in a moment, but Chris has been the sum of some of the best places on the planet.
Thank you.
He'll tell us. So I bet you he's going to guess what that wine is.
But back in the day, just down the street, Red.
Oh, Red?
Restaurant with...
Auberge, Red.
Auberge, yeah. Good
You've done them all.
I'll tell you the best was Chateau Marmont, which
yes.
I'm sure you're familiar
My
with.
Favorite.
I could tell you some stories, but it would probably
well,
get
we
in a lawsuit or something.
Well, we should tell a few.
A lot of fun down there. Cheers. Thank you.
So, Chris, forgive me, I interrupted you. You were going into... You see, a true musician.
Yeah.
That's the five senses all the way.
I feel like
way.
We're in church.
I can hear the bells of Notre Dame.
Oh, wow. That's pretty great.
So this is a Top Gun wine for Top Gun sommelier. But Chris, so music, almost two decades,
yeah.
Traveling all around the world, DJing like crazy.
Music is the best. I mean, there's so many wine people. You have a lot of guests on the show. Anybody that's in wine probably has some sort of musical interest or plays guitar.
Yeah.
Have you found that?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing.
For sure.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it lets you go. Like right now, you have a lot of time at home or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'll go in the garage and just play and make new songs. And I'm teaching my son how to make new songs. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. It just feels so good.
Mixing,
yeah. And he plays the keyboard, and we'll put beats together, and write rap songs about wine.
Well, you're going to have to play another one for us.
Okay.
I mean, the one on your entrance was very good.
Thank you.
We need to hear more. It's actually very interesting. The wine we're tasting is always made in music.
Hmm. Oh.
We believe the grapes feel the vibration of the music, and we play in Burgundy, a combination of classical music. I'm a big fan of Beethoven, big fan of Wagner, Debussy, Chopin, Mozart, and a little bit of Vivaldi to wake up.
Wouldn't Wagner sort of make the wine a little edgy?
Yeah. I like it. You know, that's for the whole cluster when they come in the tank.
Right.
And then on the Russian River side, we love to play the beats of today.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of a combination of the two worlds, old for Burgundy.
Right.
And sometimes we revert it.
I've worked at many restaurants where, you know, either the chef won't play music or the music's like Nirvana or some, you know, like some pretty loud rock music or grunge stuff or rap music.
I think we need music when we dine, don't you think?
You have to. Like when I make fried chicken, I always have like New Orleans music or something that kind of gets me in the mood.
Is it one of your key recipe, fried chicken?
Yeah. Secret recipe.
Secret. Well, we're going to have to try it.
Yeah.
We're going to have to cook one day.
Yeah. Oh, let's cook.
We'll get you back and do fried chicken.
Doing a little potatoes.
And wrap. Yeah. And mix.
Yeah.
So what was the awakening, your enlightenment, your moment when you said, maybe I'm going to move into the world of wine? What happened?
Yeah, it was, back in the day, after I got out of college, I was working in various jobs, all kinds of different jobs that would blow your mind probably. And I'd hang out.
There's one we want to hear. That was a second life.
Well, okay. The one interesting job I had was working on an adult line where I was kind of a decoy. Do you remember that? What was the guy's name? There was a TV show. It was kind of like a late night show. And during the commercials, they would flash this thing. Hey, call 1-976, you know, whatever it was. You know, hot chick.
Oh, you
something.
Still remember the number. We may try it tonight and it still works.
Anyhow, they would. I can't believe I'm telling you the story. How do you get these stories out of me? I can't believe it.
But that was a fun.
It was
experience.
Fun. I would just get people on the line, and they would all talk and spend their money, and that was it.
But, really?
Yeah.
You have that deep voice that got them going.
I didn't really talk at all. I just
hey, who's out there? And they want to speak.
And then they all started talking.
I know.
Yeah, you know, got off. So, oop, bad turn.
Let's see.
But anyway,
dear friends, I'm sure you're. Well, right. Back to wine.
Yeah. Okay, so we were talking about wine very, very astutely. Okay, so I remember going into a grocery store, and I used to drink. I would drink whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to kind of enjoy wine. And I came across this wine that was from the Penedès.
Yeah.
And it was Sangre de Toro.
Oh.
The blood of the bull.
Oh, that's it.
Miguel Torres. And the cool thing about it was it had a little bull hanging on the side. Like this, you could put it on your keychain. I thought, oh, that's cute. I'll buy that. So I bought that. And then the wine was great. It was a red wine. Mm. Turns out it was like Garnacha and Mazuelo and all these interesting grapes from northern Spain.
That's right.
Near Barcelona. And we didn't have... Not that I'm an old guy, I couldn't just go on my phone and look on the internet, what's in this wine? You know, I had to kind of research it, and that's really what got me going. I think that was the wine that changed my life.
Wow. Miguel would love to know
$6.99, you know, in the grocery store.
Yeah, but that's, you know, it's not a matter of price. It's a matter of just looking at the beverage in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
And were you drinking something else before that? Beer or spirits or
I was drinking, you know, cheap wine or stuff or tequila, you know, like a usual college kid would do.
And then you decided to make it your life.
Yeah, I decided because I'll tell you the quick story is that I was in San Francisco, I was selling wine.
Yeah.
And I went in to see Larry Stone.
Of course.
And Larry Stone, you know, he read me the riot act. He goes, what are you doing bringing that crap in here? You know, I won't tell you I was working for her, but you know, I brought the wine in.
You
He said, come back when you have, you know, more of a story to tell.
Okay.
You know something more about the wine. And so I thought, oh, okay, that's pretty interesting. So I came back in with this wine, which was not, he was at Rubicon in San Francisco. And it wasn't really fitting for the restaurant, but he said, here, let me try this and try that and try that. And he said, you should check out the sommelier program. And I said, okay. And he said, join this tasting group. So I did, and I did it so I could meet other, I did it purely to sell wine to other, you know, accounts.
Yeah.
And it turns out I really enjoyed it, you know. And I took, I went up and took the first level Master Sommelier exam, which is the intro exam, because my friend Rob Renteria, who was, you know, recently at La Folie in San Francisco,
of course.
He decided to bow out, and there was a spot open, and I showed up. It was in St. Helena at CIA, and I went in there, and I took the test, and I studied, and I got the highest score.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
I'm going to toast to that.
I couldn't believe it. I said, oh, my
but
God.
Congratulations. You see, dear friends, out of nowhere, one intention leads to another.
That's what I'm telling you. Take any opportunity you can. Yeah. Try all opportunities. Just don't go, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Do everything you can. As weird as it, you know, to some point, as it may seem, we're not on your path. I can't tell you how many times I've done, you know, say, hey, do you want to try this job or you want to do that? And I've done it.
Yeah.
I tell my son that all the time. You got to do it.
I love
it. Yeah, so I took the exam and the guy said, hey, why don't you go and do the next level?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay, sure. So I went and took the next level in New York, which at the time was the advanced exam. And I went with my friend Jason Alexander, who was recently at, I just forgot the name, the Progress restaurant in San
That's
Francisco.
That's right, in San Francisco, yeah.
So we took the exam. We went to Daniel Ballou's restaurant in New York the night before. And we just got, I guess I can't swear on the, you know, whatever. We got drunk. And we drank a lot, and Daniel came out, and he sat at the table, and we tried all these wines, and the cheese guy came along, and we were out there till like 3 in the morning.
And it's a magical place, isn't it?
A great place.
But he's a magician with food and wine.
He's incredible.
And the experience, of
course. The whole experience, and it was one of the greatest meals I ever had, but it was kind of a dumb thing to do, because I was extremely hungover the day of the exam. But maybe it was good because, you know,
you
I was more relaxed.
Again?
I passed.
Number one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really.
That's your only position you like,
cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Pole position.
Yeah. But then the Master Sommelier exam came out and I did terrible. So I took that and I just failed miserably on my first shot. And I came back and got it after my third.
Congratulations.
Shot. Yeah.
And you kept trying. And so you became then a somm.
Yeah.
So your world was restaurant.
Yeah,
education and
right.
Obviously influencing a lot of other young people who, or people in general who wanted to become some.
Yeah. And the way to do it is, because I'm just a regular guy, you know, drinking regular wine, everything else. I don't have any, you know, airs about me or anything. I'm not pompous or, you know, But so I always thought it's important to tell people about wine. So no matter what you think, it's a good answer. Just say whatever you want. My mom always says smooth. Oh, if she was here right now, sitting next to me, she'd go, hey, what's taking you so long to pour more wine? Her glass would be empty the whole time. And you would ask her, what do you think about that wine? She'd go, that's smooth. I love that. And that's the greatest statement.
Everybody needs to be using their own words.
Just enjoy it. Enjoy wine. There shouldn't be any sort of, you know, any of that elitism.
The world of sommelier in America has become so strong, which is so exciting, so much knowledge. So how did you continually grow within that world and kept bringing others within that world?
When you pass a master sommelier exam, I mean, you become very busy. Well, you know, you're still busy doing your job, but it's one of the great things about the organization, which I don't think they get credit for, is that mentoring people is very important. So Dennis Kelly, who was at the French Laundry, one of my greatest students, you know, it's funny saying that now. He's a master sommelier and now in Palo Alto. And, you know, just to bring people up and to help people. They come over to my house, where they used to, you know, back in the day, come over to the house and I would do a tasting for them.
That's great.
30 minutes. This coming Monday for Christy Norman at Spago, I'm doing her tasting group. That's going to take me 4 hours to run through all these people.
Wow.
And it's a big commitment, all on Zoom. But these are people who are inspired by it. And with our Sommelier Foundation, there's so many people on the board who are inspired by other members. And that's the whole idea, is to keep people inspired and happy and encouraged. And that's the best thing we can do. It's not become a master sommelier for yourself, you know, or for your job, and then to like disappear. You have to keep people going, you know what I mean? Because I was there. I was one of those people who just like, you know, didn't know who to turn to. And there were so many great people who I could call and say, I don't know if I can do this. And they would say, yeah, of course you can. Yeah, let's taste together and figure it out.
That's right.
Yeah.
So let's analyze this wine.
Yeah.
And walk us through how you think and how you taste.
Right.
As a master sommelier.
So if you're in a blind tasting, or if you're doing the master sommelier exam, you have to be very robotic.
Well, let's be robotic, because that's a blind tasting. Chris does not know this wine.
He may know it's
a Pinot, but that is already figured out. So.
Yeah. So you go through it, and this glass is amazing. You used to taste that little glasses. But okay, so first
Passion Collection.
Yeah, I love it. So the
Do you need another sound just for the sake of it?
It does.
DJ Vitamix is here with us.
It sounds like being at the at church in France somewhere, right, with the bell.
Or maybe in the nightclub with Chris. Maybe every nightlife we do now, we should start with a few bells.
I love it, yeah.
Sounds of crystal.
Yeah. Or have somebody in the corner doing that for us.
We'll be the pastors giving the absolute confession of whatever behavior is about to happen.
I don't think we need that.
We don't remember.
Yeah, you should build a confessional back.
Well, here it is.
Oh, yeah.
You see those eggs?
Oh, there's the priest.
And she is here. And we believe priests should be women as well. Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
Right. And they can marry and divorce and do whatever they want.
Very good. All right, so.
Back to the wine.
Back to the wine. So in this wine, I mean, the first thing you look at is the color.
Yeah.
And the color is this beautiful, vibrant, almost purple. You can tell it's a young wine. Mm-hmm. You can tell it's... you know, it's a particular variety. You know, for instance, if this was Zinfandel or Cabernet, it'd be much darker.
Yeah.
You can almost see through it. So as you're going through the exam, you know, you're able. To me, it's kind of like you're getting rid of things, right?
That's right.
You're getting rid of things.
It's a process of elimination.
Elimination, right? So in this point, obviously, it's not a white wine. So we're getting rid of Zinfandel and we're getting rid of a bunch of those things, and you can see how brilliant it is.
Yeah.
So not a Cabernet, and that's basically all you need to do.
Okay.
That's the sight. And on the smell to me is more important than the taste of the wine.
Mm-hmm.
Because this one has such beautiful aromatics. So first off, you're thinking of, you know, all these beautiful flowers and herbs, and you're just like running through an herb garden. I gotta watch myself here. Yeah. You know,
so you
I
go through
yeah.
typically, you know, herbs,
yeah,
vegetables, flowers, fruits, you go through.
It's the secondary aromas to me. And those are the most important, but in the exam, so if I was describing this wine to you at a restaurant and you'd never had it, and I said, let me tell you about this wine.
Yeah.
So to you, I would get very romantic. I would tell you about
good.
Rose petals.
That's what I would love. Yeah. Do you want to hold my hand?
Yeah. It depends on who you're with, but yeah. So, you know, you would talk about sort of...
Oh, here she is. We took her arms out because we knew you
she
would grab her.
She was a little handsy, right?
She would start to touch you after that description.
By the way, this is a great interview.
Thank you for having
Thank you.
Me. Yeah. So rose petal, I like that.
Yeah, so you get all these beautiful sort of floral notes. And that's on the floor, I would describe it to you more like that.
Yeah.
On the restaurant floor. In the exam, I have to be a little more methodical. So what we're doing at that point is seeing if you can tell me about three things, like the fruit,
yeah.
what the fruits are, the earth, and then the wood or how the wine is made.
Great.
So does this have a lot of oak on it?
Yeah.
And this seems to have a minimal amount of oak on it, given that, you know, you can smell things like toast, those, you know, clove,
yeah.
vanilla, that sort of thing. So there's minimal amount, not mm-hmm. that much. But the fruit is really in your face. It's just beautiful. And it's just lush and plush, you know, with all the, you know, cherries and raspberries and blueberries and blackberries. And it's just so, you know, warm. And it's like you just pick the fruit off of that.
I love it. So romance, earth,
right,
and yes. what you sense and how the wine is made. That's a great way to think about the wine itself.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't fall into that trap of, oh, yeah, it's red wine. It smells like blackberries. And, you know, it's a lot of sommeliers, they get too sort of technical on it.
Yes.
I don't want to hear that. Have you ever gone into a restaurant and said, what's that wine like? They go, oh, yeah, blueberries, blackberries. You know, it's a full-bodied wine. I'm like, okay, that doesn't tell me anything.
And it doesn't tell me about this with food. The food, exactly.
Not even, with the food, for sure, but tell me why you like it, why
That's
you
right.
recommended it. Why is this on your wine list? You know why? Because I tried this wine with the Jean Charles, and that wine blew me away. We had this together. I couldn't believe the fruit in it. It's one of the best Pinot Noirs I ever had. Would you buy that wine?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Can you give me three cases?
Yeah, right.
Sorry, it's on allocation. So what
That's
does
how
it...
you do it. You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah.
No, and I thank you for that because it's giving us, all of us, a lot of ideas on how to interpret wine, taste wines, and not think always mechanical or robotic about
yeah.
it.
It's wine.
Engaging us to think as well about the experience.
Exactly.
We have a friend in front of us.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah,
we're
yeah.
building friendship.
That's exactly right.
So where is that wine from, do you think?
I would guess it would be Sonoma County, somewhere mm-hmm. in Pinot Noir from... so like if you think about Carneros, Carneros has a... A bit of rough edges. I mean, not in a bad way, but it's not Carneros because it's all sexy and sleek and velvety. So to me, it's more going into that Russian River, Sonoma County.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
What about the other half? There's always two sides to the story.
What other half?
Well, maybe it's 50% one place and 50%
oh,
the other.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, he's a Frenchman. Deep dive into his
50%.
Family tree. So the other 50
so you're going
is Burgundy.
Are you kidding me?
Yes!
And it's not Jefferson time.
Yes!
Oh, it is!
He did it! I promise all of you he had no clue. And
wow,
there's a few
cool.
other villages in the Côte de Nuit.
No
what
way,
else
that's awesome.
Think?
That is a great wine.
So
Gevrey really cool.
is the feminine side?
Yeah. And it also gives that, I don't know, that energy to it that I really like. It kind of infuses the Russian River Valley with that French energy.
That's
your
right.
energy.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I'll give you a little bit of a toast.
More.
No, you deserve more. So, can you believe this is a wine Gina and I did for our wedding in 2009. We blended literally a barrel of each for the fun of it to give to the guests because everybody knew a lot about wine as our guests.
Oh, great.
And we thought, let's bring bewilderness to it. Let's bring confusion in a good way. And everybody loved it and wanted more.
Yeah.
So we made another barrel and that became JCB number 3 because
yeah, that's great.
Mathematics, as I'm so good at it, 1 + 1 = 3. So now tell us about something you recently created, which is phenomenal. And Chris is very generous, not only with his time, with the peers that he's raising, as well as the Sommelier Association. So
cool.
tell us about what you've created over
yeah,
the
yeah.
last 5 months.
Thank you.
And how you're helping everyone in the hospitality business. Because as you're
yes.
saying, I want to raise my glass to you because Chris has created the hardest thing to do in the most difficult time to do it. And he's making an enormous difference. And we'll tell you how you can help.
Yeah, thank you. So, it was a weird time. It was the beginning of, well, mid-March, like March 16th. And I had a couple of events canceled that I was going to do. And so I took my family out to Bodega Bay.
Yeah.
And we went to a hotel and we were just kind of hanging out. And they closed the restaurant. And then I got some calls from other sommeliers. And they said, I'm scared to death. You know, I don't know if we're going to close down. I don't have a job. And these are people who, in the restaurant business, it's a great business because it's such a community. And you could go to another place to work, or there's always somewhere you could go or something you could do.
It's an extended family. Well, it's a big circle. Yeah.
In this case, there was nothing anybody could do. And what really hit me was around 10 o'clock that night, after a dinner on March 17th, I got a call from a friend in Vegas, and he had two little boys, and he was raising his kids as a single dad. He said, I just got laid off my job, a really good job, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Then the school got canceled, and I was really kind of, I was worried, so I called Christy Norman, again, who's down at Spago.
Yeah.
And we talked for a little bit, and I said, we got to put something together or do something for our community. And she said, well, you should start a GoFundMe page.
Yeah.
Which I don't know anything about. So I logged on there, I looked at it, and I created a page, and I put a picture up, you know, that I saw a Cartier picture of the little boy with the bottles.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah,
I said,
of course.
Emergency fund for sommeliers. We're trying to raise $7,000. And so we got a couple of great donations, you know, small donations. And Chrissy started calling some people that she knew, and we got a couple of master sommeliers, a master of wine, and we put this group together, which we called the board, and we started soliciting donations from people. And this thing grew and grew and grew like I've never seen before, into we're almost there at $1 million.
Wow.
$1 million in donations.
Are you serious?
From wonderful people.
$1 million.
$1 million.
In about 4 months.
Yeah, since March.
Yeah.
It's just been outrageous. I can't even believe it. And so I became the treasurer because I'm in Napa and I have make a bank account. And then I just started getting checks in the mail. Like, you know, one day a check came in for $300,000. And I showed it to my son, and I said, wow, look at that, $300,000,
you know?
Let's go buy a house. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know. And these checks kept coming, and then
It in dollars, or was it in Bitcoin?
Yeah, it was in dollars, thankfully. And then so we had this group of people who would go online, sommeliers who would go online to apply, and they would give us their stories a little bit, and then we would vote on them as a board, completely anonymous. So the thing would come in. We have a person, Arden, who works for us, who does all the admin, everything to do with the organization. She took all those applications, took the names, the cities, and the restaurants off of the applications, and then gave us this blank slate of human stories. And from there, we voted on, you know, this person deserves an award. And we started, physically me writing out checks for $500 to, my God, I can't remember how many people, hundreds of people, and then just mailing them. And then recently, the thing I'm so proud of is that we started this thing called the Grand Cru program.
Yeah.
Of which some of the stories we get are very difficult, and they bring tears to my eyes.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure.
And you read them, and
we're living difficult times.
Such difficult times. People can't pay their rent, and they have kids.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of families with a new baby, or where the mom and dad both were working in restaurants, and so we decided to award them. We pay their rent. We pay their car payment. We pay their, electricity bill. Up
That's
to a certain
amazing.
Point. And so, just over the last few days, I've been physically writing these checks over the Labor Day weekend, sending them out, and the joy people.
Oh.
Right.
You're giving me goosebumps
of
excitement, because being able to do something for others
is
what life is about.
Yeah. To make a difference in some people, and these are sommeliers, which people don't realize. A lot of times you think about a sommelier, it's that wine guy or wine woman, she just drinks champagne all day and stuff. But it's not that. If you understand what the sommelier world is, it's like having to leave your family. You get to the restaurant early. You come home at 1 or 2 in the morning after busting your ass and dealing with all kinds of stuff. And those people are the most vulnerable in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
So those people are the first people that are going to be let go, and they're the last people that anybody's going to think about rehiring.
That's for
sure. I mean, it's a complete, the whole sommelier.
When they reopen, and if they reopen.
If they reopen, yeah.
So I'd love for you to try a program we've done with Raymond for now 10 years.
Yeah.
Because we love sommelier. And we adore the sommelier world because a sommelier, dear friends, is the ambassador of the winery. There's no one better. The chief ambassador brings the wine to the table, tell the stories, tell the dreams of why he loves the wine. So, Chris, was we started 10 years ago when we bought Raymond, literally in 2010. It's the first program, and this is in our big anniversary. And we actually started with the 2008 vintage, is bringing sommelier, 12 sommelier a year, the best of the best, competing together to blend a wine according to certain parameters in Napa Valley and within a certain blend criteria.
It's very cool.
Directed by Stephanie Putnam, our winemaker.
Ah, yes.
And Thane Knutson, you know them both.
Stephanie, we worked together at Farniente.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Right.
So I'd love for you to try it. So
yeah, that'd be great.
All the sum told us we should obviously put it in screw cap, which we thrilled.
Uh-huh.
And dear friends, this
really,
program...
the Psalms didn't say put wax on it? Go ahead. Sorry.
They wanted to put us in a wooden box, individually stapled. It's a joke because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
Easier, and there is a ceremony on how to open.
It's, those are great.
Maybe you should be the one opening.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you want to grab it?
Yeah. Which one should I...
This is maybe the latest. Because... a significant portion of this bottle is actually going to your organization.
I love that.
Unified Sommelier Foundation.
That's
Unified Sommelier
United,
Foundation.
United Sommelier
United.
Foundation.
United and they're unified.
So I had this one back in the day when these screw caps came out. The guy said, let me show you exactly how to open it. So he would, you know, stand to the table. Hear that little click.
Oh, and, sexy crack.
And then I don't know how he did it, but at the time he was able to roll it down his arm.
Ooh.
And do like this thing.
Oh, I like it.
Which I haven't mastered the art of yet.
Well, that was pretty good how you did it.
The other thing I thought was really cool is, and it took me a while because I'm pretty adept, or unadept, I should say, is the back which lists all the sommeliers that are involved.
Absolutely.
I love that. That's
so,
really
dear friends, we've had over 100 sommeliers in 10 years. 10 to 12 a year, so maybe 120 now. And we did in 2018 vintage the celebration of the one who won every year.
Ah.
So what is so cool, and you said it so well, wine tasting is a lesson of humility. So you don't even recognize sometimes your own wine that you made. And I've been wrong so many times. So we bring them at the end of a great session.
Mm-hmm.
They elect themselves the winner. And it's often not even the wine they've made. So we brought that year every sum that who actually won every year and did a big celebration.
That's great.
And all the names on the back of the... So let's try it.
So we've got 2018 and
2017.
And the 17's in the market and the 18's coming out later.
That's right. So what happened is obviously as we were releasing... almost releasing the 2018, it's normally only in the restaurant world and hotels.
Mm.
But sadly, everything collapsed. So now we opening it through our wine club and very unique wine programs. So it's available direct.
Cool. I love that. This is amazing. Is this Gevrey Chambertin?
I know.
That's so cool.
And Henri Saint-Georges and Chambon-Musigny in it.
Ah, really? Do you know? My last name, Les Blanchards.
Yes.
Do you know there's a vineyard
of
in Mauricie-Saint-Denis?
Mauricie-Saint-Denis.
Premier Cru.
That's why I called you Mr. Blanchard the Premier Cru.
I wish it was my family. That'd be great. Yeah.
Well, you know, we can enjoy that wine because, dear friends, I live less than a kilometer away from that vineyard.
Is that right?
Les Blanchards, of course.
In
I know very well. My
cool.
uncle, who is sadly no longer with us, but my aunt, house. Feeds into the Premier Cru Blanchard.
Is that right?
Yes, that's where she lives.
So I'm okay at French, not very good, but I was by myself and I took a car and I said, I want to locate this vineyard. I want to get a rock.
Yes.
Right? You know, just
I'll get you a rock.
No. So I went and I'm like, this has got to be the place. And there was two guys in there, you know, plowing or doing whatever. And I said, you know, excusez-moi, pardon. I was like, you know, Les Vignes Blanchard or whatever.
Yeah.
That was terrible, sorry.
No, that's good.
Yeah, and they looked at me like, ooh. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, this got to be the place, you know? I said, Blanchard, very, you know, clearly. So I just picked up a rock.
Oh, wonderful. So now you have it in your house?
I do have, yeah.
Are you using it to scratch long playing records too? Because it could have a pretty cool noise.
It's on the dresser. My wife complained. She goes, you have all these rocks on your dresser. Yeah, from Vouvray or wherever. Yeah.
That's what wine is all
about.
That's
what being a geek is about.
Well, you know, what I used to do in the old days when I was doing a lot of vineyard tours in Vougeot, I used to have our guests leak the rocks from the vineyards. And I said, bring it close to your tongue. Not a French kiss, don't swallow it either. But leak it, feel the minerality and the energy of the rocks. And I think it's very important.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
I have a huge collection doing vineyards when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, because you know the ocean, you know, the Atlantic Ocean used to cover Burgundy 20 million years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So we still find fossils of fish.
Yeah, right.
Profiles or eventually leaves and everything else that dates back as far as that.
That's so pretty cool.
So to the song.
Salud.
So tell us, as you describe the wine, because we only gonna listen to Chris from now on, forget me.
You can see the difference in the color right away. I mean, it's, you know, it has more depth, it's definitely more opaque. It has that great Cabernet, you know, aroma, which, you know, I mean, it has almost like a meaty quality to it,
yes.
You know what I mean? You can tell it has that deep chocolate and brambles. And
yeah.
And you can smell the earth. If you've ever, you know, been in like a pickup truck and you're driving down the road and the dust is kicking up.
That's,
you know, just
exactly
that whole sort of earth smell, which I really love.
He's describing Rutherford, yeah. Dear friends.
Yeah.
That famous dust that,
yeah,
come
exactly
out of your nostrils and you say, oh, I want to sneeze or I want to drink. I
think where's this from? Drink.
This is a combination, the alchemy of the beautiful Napa Valley North Coast.
So
that year in 2018, we decided to go large. So we went throughout the whole North Coast. But you know what is exciting is, and Chris, I have another question for you that is a very important one. But I want to tell you a story. Our whole sales force in the United States, all distributors said, we want to help United Sommelier Association that you created.
Thanks.
So they started to do program. Like, we have a lady in Texas named Carla who runs our Texas region and all that. And she decided to do point of sales retail and said, you know, so much a bottle is going,
oh, really?
To the Sommelier Association, and they are raising a lot of money for you. And I'm so excited because it's running till the end of November.
Yeah.
And we're going to come up with a big check for you
amazing.
Helping all our Somms.
And do you know that money, actually, the money comes to my mailbox at my house. I walk down the street with Charlie.
Yeah.
We open the mail. We get the mail. The check comes in. For instance, maybe your check.
Yeah.
Comes. I take it to the bank with my mask on, put it in the United Sommeliers Foundation account. And from there, I write a check. And that check pays somebody's rent. Or it pays the medical bills for their new daughter or son. So, I mean, it comes in and it goes
out. So you started a foundation, basically.
Yeah, yeah. To help people. Like, just basic people. And that's one of the greatest things you can do. Is to help other people. And to be, you know, I try and be humble about it, but I feel so good in my heart.
What is your passion?
Well, my passion is my passion is wine, first and foremost. I've never been in anything like this. I can't even believe it. The stories behind it. One bottle of wine has so many stories in it. It's a story of the vintage. It's a story of the person. It's a story of the vineyard. It's a story of where it's been. What happened in the Napa Valley, the history of the Vallejo Mexican land grant. It's going back and back. To immigrants coming from all over the world to establish this valley. That's just that bottle of wine. You go to another bottle of wine, there's a ton of stories going back to the Romans. Each bottle of wine, it's unbelievable, has such stories about the year and then back into history. So for me, that's passion.
That's your passion.
And you can study, I'm a master sommelier, so what? I don't know anything. You know what I mean? There's so much more.
The more we taste, the less we know.
Exactly. Well, that's because I drink too much.
So now you've created this. What is your dream?
My dream, yeah. Well, my dream is to...
It doesn't have just to be about the, obviously, the foundation. It could be about other things.
Well, my dream is to be on the beach in Mexico. You know what I mean? In some little place with my family and just going down and getting a margarita and then being a beach bum. I mean, that's the real dream. But until
you then, like surfing?
No. Forget surfing. I like to.
Well, you like making margarita.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
Margarita. No, you know, just to hang out and enjoy life, enjoy the sun, and but you know, that's down the road. You know, right now it's taking care of my kids, it's taking care of the foundation, you know, it's doing my job, it's representing the Napa Valley, it's, you know, there's so many things to get done now, and eventually, you know, I'll go and relax. Like every day, wake up in the morning, make sure the baby has a lunch, make sure the baby has diapers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make sure everybody's taken care of during the day work, you know, at night, same, make sure everybody's fed, everybody's doing their schoolwork. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And then the dream is that they all succeed and they do well in their school, that they make lots of grandkids, you know, I can relax, they come visit me in Mexico.
So Mexico is the place. I thought it was going to be Nantes in France eventually.
Yeah. Well, we weren't
going back to retiring the old world.
I'll tell you, we miss France so much. We go all the time. We took the baby there when she was a couple months old.
Well, you're welcome any day. You have friends in France, so you come anytime.
Yeah.
The world of wine is about friendship, which is the most important.
It is indeed. Yeah, it is indeed.
So now we've had an amazing time together. I'd like you to give everyone with us watching. You've had four lives. There's another five left.
Yeah, oh, yeah. For sure.
At least.
There is.
maybe you send everyone with a great message of whatever you want to say to everyone during the time we've lived.
Thank you.
Wherever you wish to advise people of what to do.
Look at me. I'm blessed. I'm sitting with this amazing man who's really sort of transformed the Napa Valley. Coming from,
thank you.
Well, for sure. I mean, you brought such an energy to this place.
Thank you.
Coming from, you know, your roots in Burgundy. And I'm just a regular guy. I'm sitting, you know, with
John. With another regular guy.
And John Charles. And I'm blessed in my life. Yeah, who would have thought this? And that's why I was saying earlier, take those opportunities that you have brought to you. Take care of your friends, you know, keep your family close and do things for others as much as you can possibly. And keep positive because it's hard nowadays. So
keep advice. Remember March 17, you know, someone created United Sommelier Foundation out of nowhere, out of a phone call he got from a friend of his out of Vegas. Isn't it amazing? And today, in a matter of months, they've raised $1 million. Yeah. They've distributed checks of a 500 increments to help people to pay their bills, from apartments to car payments to whatever needs to happen.
And I have no idea how to do this. I mean, I've had no idea. I don't know how to run a foundation. I don't know how to file for a 501c3. All this stuff. Like I say, take any opportunity. You know, it came, we made it happen, and now look at us go.
And I loved it. He went online, found out about it, and did it.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I want to commend you for doing this.
Thank you.
Mean, we've known each other for a long time. I love to see him at Auberge, at Red, promoting wines, being an amazing ambassador of wine. But I say but because what happened was an unfortunate event for all of us, and he turned it into an amazing, incredible opportunity. We, as an organization, are so glad to help in the little humble way we can.
Thank you.
To pivot, to help Psalms. We love the world of Psalms, and we love the world of music. We love Mr. Christopher Blanchard.
It's a pleasure. Back
dear friends, to love, friendship, passion for others.
Santé.
Making a difference.
Cheers, y'all.